urban farm. And yeah, people stop by. People are really curious as to what we're doing.
Oh, that's so cool. I've lived in the Phillips neighborhood for so long. I grew up here, and this is like the first time I've heard of anything happening.
King Park does a similar program where they have like neighbors tap trees just like in their yard and kind of pool the sap to boil it at MLK Park. So we're kind of taking a page from their book in some ways, just with how the program operates. And so it is open for like if neighbors in the Phillips neighborhood have a tree in their backyard that they want to tap and they want to participate in this, that's totally welcome.
That brings people together and like a sense of community, and then a sense of, I think, pride as well, because if they see the final product and feel like they're a part of it, I think it's really special.
We don't think of an urban environment as land a lot of the time. You know, it's a very like human-centered environment. So the more that we can build those connections to place and to the land and to traditional practices within an urban environment, we can kind of show that that's possible.
And I think it's a natural thing. So once you kind of see how things operate, it's just kind of like inside, you're like, okay.
Exactly. It's intuitive. Like with most things related to connecting with the natural world, once you start to experience it, you realize how much sense it makes and it feels very natural.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So once the final product is done, how do you go about like gifting the final product to the community?
So the ratio of sap to syrup is about 40 to 1. And that's the best case scenario with true sugar maples. So the maples that we've been tapping, I don't think they're all sugar maples, or I know that most of them aren't. And so they probably have a higher, you know, maybe 50 to 1 sap to syrup ratio. I think all said and done, we'll probably get about a gallon of syrup. So we're gonna bottle that and give it to definitely the people that participated in the program. And if there's any more, we'll just use it as, you know, a way to show gratitude to community partners and people that we work with.
And it gives more of a perspective on how, when you produce food, like how grateful, like gives you a more different appreciation for food you actually harvest and process for yourself.
So yeah, it's definitely a labor of love. I've had a lot of fun doing this. The syrup that we have gotten, I think tastes pretty good. It doesn't taste exactly like maple syrup, but it's, you know, it's sweet. It's good. I was really grateful to be able to try out this project, and I hope to do it again and keep doing it for years to come.
And then maybe it'll just be something that the neighborhood looks forward to every time this year.
Yeah, it was a great way to build community. It was a great way to connect with neighbors and kind of celebrate that, you know, the little bit of warm weather that we've been getting and kind of that promise of spring that's right around the corner.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time, Laura. Thank you so much for all the work that you do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for reaching out.
Join us next time for more voices and stories that inform, uplift, and shape our communities right here on Minnesota Native News. Minnesota Native News is produced by AMPERS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Buju, hello. Welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Bearpaw Shields. Bearpaw is from the Fort Peck, Assiniboine, and Sioux tribes and is a St. Cloud State University alumna. In our conversation, Bearpaw Shields talks about getting her college degree in her 40s in order to carry out the change she wanted to see in the world. She talked about her role in a project showcasing Indigenous languages at the Sherbourne National Wildlife Refuge. And at the time when we talked, she was working at St. Cloud State University's American Indian Center. Please enjoy our conversation from April 2025.
I live like 3 miles away from the refuge. I'd like to hike. And so that's my serenity, my peace of heaven. That's where I feel like I'm at home, is in the refuge. When I was hiking, there was no information about American Indians. So then I had to muster up that courage to talk to the then manager. That's basically when it started. I volunteered to try to do something.
Bonjour, hello, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem.
And I'm your other host, Co-Primo Miigwech, for joining us today. Native Lights is more than a podcast and radio show. It's a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Each and every week we have great conversations with wonderful guests from a whole lot of different backgrounds. We're talking musicians, artists, community leaders, teachers, language warriors, you name it. They have a wonderful mix of passions, and we talk to them about their gifts and how they're sharing them with the community. And it centers around finding purpose in our lives and amplifying Native voices. And we're doing that today, Leah. What's going on?
Hey. You know, just trying to keep up, keep my ears clean, brush my teeth a couple times a day, and I'm doing good. How about you?
I fail at that every now and then, especially the ears part. I'm just kidding. Man, you know, growing up, I would never think that I would need to pull out the ear hairs. And now I got to tell the barber to trim my eyebrow hairs. It's great. This is late 30s for you. Let's do it.
Well, I mentioned the keeping ears clean. And maybe we keep this in, maybe we don't. I don't know. But did you know a common symptom of perimenopause is itchy ears?
I did not know that.
Like itchy inner ears. So
today I learned.
Just putting that out there for no reason whatsoever.
Oh, come on. No reason ever.
No related reason
at all.
Whatsoever. But seriously, I'm doing great. What do we got today?
Our guest today, who we're very excited to speak to, is Bearpaw Shields.
Right on.
Bearpaw Shields is from the Fort Peck, Assiniboine, and Sioux tribes, and she's an alumni from St. Cloud State University, where she is the Indigenous Learning Community Program Coordinator at the American Indian Center there. Bearpaw Shields is also a board member of the Friends of Sherbourne National Wildlife Refuge. A lot of things going on, a lot of good work, so here she is, Bonjour Bearpaw Shields. How you doing?
Bonjour Bearpaw.
Hello.
All right. Could you please start out by introducing yourself?
Bearpaw Shields. I'm Assiniboine and Sioux. My clans are Red Bottom and the Canoe Paddlers, which is located in Wolf Point, Montana. Currently live in Zimmerman, Minnesota. I grew up here in St. Cloud. I'm currently an Indigenous Learning Community Program Coordinator here in the American Indian Center at St. Cloud State University. Coming up here this May will be my 2 years at this institution. I'm also an elected board member at the Friends of Sherbourne National Wildlife Refuge, and a committee member at large for Sherbourne County Parks and Trails. So I'm very honored to be here.
Awesome. And we also like to ask, you know, how are you doing? How's the family doing?
I am doing good. It is the end of the semester here at St. Cloud State, and I am counting down the days. I'm really excited. We have 3 graduates and the cohort that I have. Just busy time of the year for me.
Well, we like to kick off our conversations by asking if there's anything that you are particularly excited about or thinking about at the moment.
That would be the graduation. So here at St. Cloud State, I thought faculty could attend the graduation, but they cannot. They have to pay for their ticket. And so I said, well, then I will volunteer all day so I can see my students walk the stage. So
you have to pay for a ticket? Come on now.
That is a surprise. Well, how about you tell us a bit about your role at SCSU?
The ILC, the Indigenous Learning Community Program, it's a newly funded program. The goal for this program is to help guide our Indigenous students on their path here for college, because a lot of them, this is their first time going to college, or probably their whole family. We call ourselves like the aunties. You know how your aunties can be. We're all in the business. Why are you not going to class? Or we haven't seen you around. What's going on? How can we help? Following up, we do events. We do field trips. Darlene St. Clair, she's part of this program as well. And so she'll do some educating. We do Dakota and we do Ojibwe. So we bring in both of the beautiful worlds together. We really focus on helping our students with identity. A lot of them kind of struggle with that. I know growing up, I struggled with that as well. So we know how important that is for our people as a whole to have that strong identity, to embrace who they are, where they come from, learning the language too. And that's part of it as well. Our language is alive and living, and it's so important for who we are as Indian people for our language. And so I really encourage our students as well. So Darlene has an elder from Mille Lacs Band that comes up and is helping the Ojibwe students with learning to do their greeting. And then she's helping the Dakota students with the Dakota aspect.
You know, having a sense of identity is very complex. And like a language is a great way to get into that and grow that. What other aspects are there to helping connect to identity?
Well, we go and take field trips. So then we'll go to Mille Lacs, let the students take a tour. We'll talk to elders. Because I think a lot of Ojibwe students, I mean, they're probably around, of course, in Wisconsin, and they're not from Mille Lacs. So I think it's great for them to see a different perspective or a different lens. For Dakota, we just recently did a trip up to Upper Sioux and got to meet with Carrie. We call her Cushy Carrie, Grandma Carrie. She is the oldest living fluent speaking Dakota for Upper Sioux. And so that was really great to have that experience.
Mm-hmm. How did you build those relationships then?
Darlene St. Clair knows a lot of people. She has a lot of great connections. I'm a talker. I love meeting people. I love interacting. For Upper Sioux, I actually met Cushy Carrie's daughter, Dawn. I saw her on TikTok. And I was like, oh, I just love her video. She makes me feel so at home. And I was at a powwow with a friend of mine, Stephanie. And I'm like, Stephanie, look, there's that lady I follow on TikTok. I got to go meet her. She's like a star. I just adore her. So I went up and introduced myself. And she was all excited. She's like, I have a TikTok fan here. And so we started talking. And she does a lot of traditional things, whether it's gathering plants, it's beading and speaking the language. And I just loved it. And so we just remained connected. And I said, would you be willing to come up and help educate and help teach? And she embraced that. And so...
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Bearpaw Shields. Bearpaw is from the Fort Peck, Assiniboine, and Sioux tribes and is a St. Cloud State University alumna. She has helped educate nature lovers about the Native history of the land. Part of this conversation is also exploring a bit of your journey. Can you tell us a bit about how you got into this position? How did you get to where you are?
So, you know, obviously I was an older adult going back to college. I was in my late 40s. What really sparked me to go to school was that I would always drive through the refuge with my children. And I said, we need to have some type of representation here. And I would say it over and over. And then I realized like, hey, you're just talking. There's no action. So then I enrolled and wanted to do something for our Native communities. So I went into communication studies, Native American Indian studies. While I was doing that at school, I had Darlene St. Clair's class, Native Nations of Minnesota, Dr. Robert Galler's class, Native American Indian History. And I was inspired. I was inspired about the advocacy, being resilient, and all these people, regardless what was happening to them, they pushed forward and not thinking of themselves, but thinking of the generations to come. I live like 3 miles away from the refuge. I'd like to hike. And so that's my serenity, my peace of heaven. That's where I feel like I'm at home, is in the refuge. When I was hiking, there was no information about American Indians. And I decided one time that I was going to go look in their gift store to see if they had pamphlets or if they had books for sale that I could learn about, you know, my ancestors or the tribal nations that resided on that land, and they didn't have anything. There was nothing to mention that Native Americans resided here at one time. So then I had to muster up that courage to talk to the then manager, Steve Carl. I introduced myself, what I was going to school for, and I said I would really like to help educate children about American Indians because we're still here. We're not going to go anywhere. I don't know what information they're being taught at school. We need to educate our kids. And if we can get to the kids, we can get to the adults. And so Mr. Carl, we had a really great conversation, even though I was really nervous. And so he invited me to their fall festival. He said I could have a table, I could have a little booth, and we would take it from there and see how it goes. I said, okay. So I was super excited. And of course, I did the rookie mistake. I grabbed anything and everything I had, books, artifacts, something that would pique the interest of people coming to the refuge and for families. And I even had Elder Joe Whitehawk come with me because I'm like, I don't know how these people are going to react. You know, I didn't know, but I didn't want to be alone. We were busy at our booth nonstop, barely had time to relieve ourselves, had to find some food for the elder, get him some coffee, and it was a big hit. I was super excited. That's basically when it started in 2017. I volunteered to try to do something.
So could you please just describe it more? Like, how big is it? Where is it? Just some background on that refuge.
The Sherbourne National Law Refuge? Well, I'm not like an expert on it, but many, many acres. No. I do not remember what year it was founded, close to the 50s, if not earlier than that. It's a refuge for animals, but then along the way, you know, there was many things that the parks needed to do to create some type of revenue. So there's hunting on there only during certain seasons. And then they do the prescribed burns. And the Friends of Sherbourne National Wildlife Refuge was, I want to say, in 1993 founded. And that was kind of a support for the refuge itself because federal funding wasn't really a lot of available. And they needed more volunteers, but they didn't have the funding to have those staff. So people who really enjoyed nature would then volunteer to help with the park rangers. And then that's what forms the Friends of Sherbourne National Wildlife Refuge. So we do work with the Federal Wildlife Refuge, but the Friends is a nonprofit organization. And so we do a lot of fundraising, you know, supplying the things that they can't get funded for.
Is the amphitheater included in that?
The amphitheater is, yes.
Let's talk about that.
The amphitheater. Oh my.
But can I just add, because yeah, I looked it up, the Sherbourne National Wildlife Refuge is 30,700 acres of space, of land, located 50 miles from Minnesota's Twin Cities metro area. That's from Friends of Sherbourne National Wildlife Refuge. Just, we'll put that in there.
Thank you.
Big place.
That's big.
And only 3 miles away from Bear Paw. No. Yes, the amphitheater. So, you know, we were at a meeting and a board meeting, and Steve Carl, the previous manager, he was getting transferred to another location. And we were talking about the amphitheater because we did the fundraising for it. And he's like, hey, Bear Paw, if you could create a design, a Native American design, what would it be for the amphitheater? And I was like, oh my goodness, like I won the lottery, right? And I'm like, I don't know, but I can come up with something. And so that's where the brainstorming began. We got, you know, a lot of consultation. We got another Indigenous person on our board because, you know, at that moment I was the only Indigenous person there. So it was a lot of time, a lot of my time. So Stephanie is Ojibwe. And so we helped the board, we helped educate the board, and that process of looking for an artist. I said, if we have an artist, I think because this is Minnesota, we should have Dakota and Ojibwe. That's only what's right, right? It makes sense. And being here at the American Indian Center, I get to look at that beautiful mural that Holly Young, Dakota Holly Young, and Gige Akinton Howes created. And so I'm like, you know, we should contact them. I see their work every day. It's beautiful. I think it's great. Plus, they've worked together already. They already have a relationship together. So I reached out. And they were excited. They're like, yeah, we would love to. And I said, this is so exciting. So that was one of the hard ones to do, is to find the artist. Then the next thing was, what are they going to create? And then because we have the federal refuge, there's some things that we have that we can't do and we can do. So that was kind of interesting too. But we left it up to the artist to come up with something that would be close to animals that would be on the refuge, something that I don't even know how to describe it. But I said it, you know, to include something sacred, of like our sacred medicine. So we have tobacco. So in the middle of the amphitheater, You have tobacco leaves for the four directions. Then you have the animals. I think there's seven animals. So we have a bear on there. There's an elk or a deer. And then we have other animals around the circle. And all of the animals around the circle connect to each other because everything is interconnected, which I thought was beautiful. And then on the outside of that is we have Dakota floral art going all the way around, which is also beautiful. It's just really breathtaking. It's just to see it in person is just, it's just something wonderful about it. I don't know. It just makes my heart so happy that I was part of that, you know. And then where you sit down, because we didn't stop there because we want this to be an education tool. So what we did was take the words for that animal and put it on the seating. So we have the word for bear in Dakota. Then we have the word for bear in Ojibwe. And then we did that for every single animal that we had displayed on the amphitheater. So now we can have that as a teaching tool for our students that we bring on there because they do many, many schools out there educating them about nature. And now they get to learn about Native Nations of Minnesota, which is beautiful.
Great. What was the opening like for that? It opened last year, right?
It did. It did. And that was a lot. Yeah. It was a lot. It was worth it. The work was worth it. We invited, I thought it was very important that we had a Dakota elder and we had an Ojibwe elder. I wanted a Dakota drum group and we need to have Ojibwe drum group. And then I said, it's important that we can extend the invitation to the chief executives for each tribal nation or community in Minnesota and go beyond there. We invited Senator Kunish and she attended. I'm trying to think who else was there. There was a lot of people there. We invited for Shakopee. They sent some people in their place. And Mike, I can't remember, is Michael, but he is also a Friends member down in the Apple Valley area. But we also had Chief Executive Virgil Wynn came and attended, which was wonderful to see him.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Bearpaw Shields. Bearpaw is from the Fort Peck Assiniboine and Sioux tribes and is a St. Cloud State University alumna. She has helped educate nature lovers about the native history of the land.
That's wonderful. I can only imagine all the jokes that were going around. I don't know. I'm just guessing there were some. I see here that you coordinated sweetgrass planting.
I did.
Can you talk about that?
Yes. So a good friend of mine, Gina Hugo, works at Sherburne County Parks and Recs. And they acquired a piece of land that is very sacred to our Native Nations here in Minnesota. And during that, I was talking with her and I said, you know, what we really need is a place where as Indian people, we can go and harvest, right? There's no sweetgrass anywhere. It's all gone. The only place you can get really sweetgrass is up in Canada. Mm. I said, we should have sweetgrass. We should have tobacco. We should have cedar and we should have sage and other medicines that we traditionally would have harvested, whether it be chokecherries, elderberries. And so she was able to find some sweetgrass that is original sweetgrass. I think she got it from the Dakotas, I'm going to say. And so she multiplied the sweetgrass. I can't even think of the word, but she said, I have enough sweetgrass if you would like to have your students, because at the time I was a culture liaison in Princeton School District. If you want to have your families come and we can plant the sweetgrass. And I said, absolutely. This is beautiful. This is what we should be doing. So we had one family came. We had other volunteers. We planted the sweetgrass. Then when I moved to St. Cloud State, I said, first thing we're going to do with our students, we're going to plant that sweetgrass. And so we've been doing that every spring now. We plant and we keep planting. And last year was the most, I think I had the most fun last year. Because as we're planting, you know, you think about the weather. It's just a thought. And it's like, okay, it's going to be clear. And then next thing you know, there's some dark skies coming. And I was like, oh no, the students are going to be like, we got to go. It's raining. We got to go. But they did the opposite. they did the opposite. They're like,
oh, wow.
Just think, our ancestors did this. It was raining. That didn't stop our ancestors. I'm like, oh, my goodness, that's great.
Heck no.
So, yes. And so what we're working on right now is Gina is trying to get other, whether it be, you know, the AIPAC, the American Indian Parent Advisory Committee, schools all over to come there to be part of that. To plant, to harvest, and to be who they are, you know, as Indian people, we should be able to harvest.
We always like to ask, you know, and you may have touched on this a little bit before, but what gives you, you know, the fuel to continue doing what you're doing on a daily basis?
Oh my gosh, that could be making me emotional. I would say, for my people. Mm. Sorry. The last of my fathers passed away last year. And so, you know, I think of his teachings and I think of my kids. Mm. My son passed away in 21. And that was hard.
Oh.
Very hard. So, I just want to make them proud. And I want to make our ancestors proud. You know, they didn't fight that fight for nothing.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you for sharing. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. But it sounds like you are doing them proud with the work you're doing. So really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. And speaking on that, we always like to ask as well, like mentors, people who have inspired you in your work.
Yeah, that would have been, well, that is not been, but it is. It still continues to be Darlene St. Clair and Dr. Galler. They inspire me all the time. And Dr. Robert Galler just finished a book regarding the Crow Creek Reservation. And I took the cohort that I have. Right now I have 12 in my cohort, and we took him to his reading, and it's so crazy because I was watching his lecture and I was like getting really inspired again. I'm like, oh my goodness, I need to write a book about our people. You know, it was just very inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm inspired about, you know, all other Native people out there doing the type of work that I'm doing, you know. Because we all have a responsibility, and that's just the way that I see that. I mean, you are in journalism, and we need more Native journalism, just like we need more Native, you know, communicators or doctors or therapists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all have a responsibility, so I think that I'm just trying to do my part.
Mm-hmm. How about the future? Like the future of the land at the refuge. What do you see? What's your hope for what comes next?
We have one sign that is permanent. And that was a win for me. And that was probably about 4 or 5 years ago, talking about Ojibwe using wild rice as a food staple. And so I was like, okay, that's a tiny step forward. That's great. But now I think that there needs to be more representation on the refuge, whether it's, you know, we're going to have a plaque for the amphitheater to, we can honor both artists and their work and to have a little bio for them. I think that that's important. I think that it's important to have pamphlets for handouts, whether it contains, you know, what tribes are located in Minnesota, you know, maybe their flags. We just need more representation. And I think, you know, being Indigenous and being part of the board, the Friends of, you know, to have a Native voice is important. You know, I think we should have a voice at every table.
Mm-hmm. Do you foresee any hardships in light of our current environment? I won't invoke.
Oh my goodness.
I won't lead you on too much with that, but.
Right? I know. It's like, oh my goodness. Yeah, there are some, we are worried.
And you're worried about funding.
You know, how can we not be worried?
Yes.
But funding, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, for our community engagement mm-hmm. is what we're calling things now. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that words have power, right? And so we unfortunately had to change our words. So community engagement